Good evening, everybody. This is the Pacifica Audit Committee on June 24th, 2019, calling to order this open session. I will call the roll just because we don't have a secretary nor a pro tem secretary yet. So let me do that. Let me make sure I have everybody on my list here. I have not everybody. Okay. All right. Gary Bost. No Gary. Okay. Darlene Pagano. Donald Goldmacher. James McFadden. Grace Aaron.
Here.
Okay. Jamie Gomez.
Here.
Paulina Vasilia.
Here.
Adrian LaViolette. You're still here, Adrian, yeah?
Yes, I'm here, sorry.
Okay, just checking. Elaine Duncan, I believe Elaine's away anyway. Okay. Eugene Hammond.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Eugene.
Hi.
Okay, Marilyn Vogt Downey.
I'm here.
Great, Sean Ropes.
I'm here.
Okay, I am here. Julie Hewitt.
Here.
And Micheline Milligan.
Here.
Okay, those are our committee members. Others. We have Maxie Jackson, our executive director.
Present.
Yeah? Okay. And from our audit firm, Rogers & Company, we have Sandeep Tulidar.
Here.
Sandeep, is that how you pronounce your last name, Tulidar?
Yes.
Was that close enough? Okay. Scott Mitchell.
Correct.
That is here. Is Jorge Diaz with us tonight?
Good evening. Yes, I am.
Oh, hi, Jorge. Great. Okay. And from NIDA, our accountants, we have George Walker is here.
Here.
And Tamara Swiderski. Great. Thank you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Have I left anybody out? I guess not. Okay, good. We'll see if some of these other folks turn up. All right. So we have a short agenda tonight. We may want to add something or other to it. First, I would like a volunteer to be pro tem secretary, if I can get one. Please, somebody.
Paulina here. If nobody else volunteers, I am willing to do so.
Thank you, Paulina. We appreciate that. But Paulina's done it a number of times. Can somebody else, perhaps volunteer to pick up the slack? Well, Paulina, I think you're it.
I guess it's me. Yeah.
Okay, then I'd like a timekeeper, at least one, to keep us more or less on track and let us know when we're going too far afield. Do I have a volunteer timekeeper? Sorry, was that somebody?
This is Julie. Oh, I can do it.
Somebody. Thank you, Julie. Appreciate it. Julie, volunteers. Okay. As you can see, we have a short agenda that is basically just looking over the fiscal year 2017 audited financial statements. I don't know if we would have time to add in elections or selections of chair and secretary for this 2019 committee, because I'm just pro tem chair right now, and we need a permanent chair and a permanent secretary. Should we leave that to the end in case we have time? Then we can always move it to the next meeting. Do I have opinions on that?
This is Adrian to the staff.
Go ahead, Adrian.
We could probably just knock that right out immediately if everyone's okay with that. It's a long time to be pro tem for no reason, but I'm open. I'm just suggesting it.
Okay. I know that I would volunteer or put myself forth as chair for this year. I don't know if anybody else wants to be chair, and I don't know if anybody would take on being secretary. That's my worry, that it might take more time to find a secretary.
Can we possibly just elect the chair then?
I guess I don't know the rules well enough to know if we can do that and then leave the secretary for, another time, whether later or next meeting.
Grace, perhaps.
Grace, please go ahead.
If there are no other candidates for the chair position, you can just be elected chair by acclamation.
Okay. And then put off electing a secretary? That's all right
sure.
to do? I just don't want to take the time and, at the beginning of the meeting when we have guests, we might have time at the end of the meeting.
Chair, may I be recognized as Bolina?
Bolina, go ahead, please.
I will nominate myself as secretary, and if no one objects, then I'll do it for now. When my schedule changes, when my schedule changes and I will have to resign, I will do so in the appropriate manner. So let's just do that.
Ah, okay. And that could happen in a month or 6 months. Well, 6 months we're almost done. But when do you anticipate that happening or possibly happening?
Right. So unfortunately, the reason why I've been reticent that I would be still is because my schedule is very variable. I sometimes get Monday nights, I teach classes, they get scheduled and rescheduled, and I don't have much control over my schedule. So in a sense, perhaps if I can just do secretary pro tem this week, and if anybody else actually has the ability to firmly commit to the next 6 months as secretary, I'll be more than happy, to have somebody else do it. But in the meantime, let me know what's the best way.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you, Paulina. Maybe we could come up with an arrangement where you would be secretary and there would be somebody who could fill in the evenings you couldn't make it or something like that. But let's leave that for the end of the meeting. We can make that a point under action items and other new business. Does that make sense?
Let's just vote now. I nominate myself if anybody seconds the nomination.
Oh.
I second.
Sorry,
yep.
Grace,
great. Go ahead. Let me ask you, does anyone else care to run, and or are there any objections to electing Bolina as secretary?
No objections.
No objections.
Oh. No objection. Okay, Bolina, thank you. You are now the secretary of the Pacifica Audit Committee. And, when you have schedule conflicts, let us know beforehand, and we'll see what we can work out. Beforehand, if you can.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay. All right. So then I nominate myself as chair.
Yes.
I second.
Okay, somebody seconded it, and do I get to conduct the election? Are there any objections? Does anyone else want to run?
Oh.
No.
Okay. I am chair by acclamation then as well?
Yes.
Acclamation. Great. Okay. Thank you. That was much easier than I'd expected, and we've solved that, and we're done with that. Excellent. Okay. As far as the rest of the agenda, I did not include approval of minutes here because I think we just got them recently, and I think we should put that off until next time because we won't have had time to review them, if that's all right with everybody else. But thank you for sending them, Paulina, and I'll check your attendance against what I have.
I actually listened to the first part of the meeting, the last minute meeting. Mm-hmm. I was able to fill in most of the attendance, but if anybody had joined later in the call, and I may not remember that, that might be a part that needs to be corrected in the minutes. But other than that, I think they should be in order. So.
Okay. I think somebody did come in late, but we'll, I think I might have that written down, so we'll check it later. Okay. But anyway, okay, so we'll put that off until next meeting to approve the minutes, in next meeting, just so we have time to read it over and, you know, see if we have any other comments. All right, so our agenda for tonight, beyond that, is basically the review of the draft of fiscal year 2017 audited financial statements. I propose a walkthrough by the auditors and accountants, however they think is best. I mean, they've presented audits many times, and they'll know how to do it. Then there's time for discussion, questions, and comments, and then we need to vote on whether we want to sign off on the draft and send it to the national board, or if we would request any changes or corrections or anything else. That's basically the meat of this meeting, then action items, and then the other new business, and then we would select the next meeting date. So can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Or motion to approve.
Yeah, that sounds very awesome.
Good. Motion to approve. No object. Do I hear any objections or changes?
Nope.
Hearing none? Okay, great. So we can move on. All right.
I came on about 10 minutes late. I just wanted to...
James McFadden. Good. I'm glad I can mark you as here.
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, because I see the Maestro screen, so I can see who's on and I can see who's talking, actually. So that's always helpful. Let's see. All right, so let's get to the review of the draft of 2017. I would like to introduce this by saying I think I sent around in an email that we're losing Scott Mitchell. He's moving on to, I hope, greener, but different pastures. And, you know, I'm sure he'll want to say something about that. Scott's been great to work with, as you can all attest as well, especially those of you who've been here since last year. But, you know, we've got Sandeep and Jorge that we'll be working with from Rogers and Company from now on. So I'll let them decide how to handle this section. And, okay, guys, go ahead.
Sure. This is Scott, so I appreciate the kind words, Eileen. I wouldn't say greener pastures. I would just say different pastures. I call him George, but I think he goes by George or Jorge. But George has actually, he's another audit principal in the office, and I'll let him kind of talk briefly about his background in a second. But just to make sure everybody is aware, George is actually the concurring principal on this engagement. So he's kind of been the guy that I will bounce ideas off, or if I have questions, or, hey, what have you run into this? So even though you guys have not maybe been aware of George, he's been peripherally involved in the audit from the beginning. And I think you guys will be every bit as well, if not better, served with George as you have been with me. So I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of that, just in case, you know, I know sometimes people can get a little apprehensive when there's turnover on the team. So anyway, hopefully this will be as seamless as possible. And with that said, I'll turn it over to George, Jorge, and let him kind of talk a little bit about his background for your benefit.
Hey.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Again, good evening, everyone. My name is George Diaz. looking forward to working with all of you all in Pacific Azada moving forward. Just to say a couple words about my background, I've been practicing for almost 14 years now, and I've been exclusively in public accounting, auditing nonprofit organizations. I started my career at a much larger firm at RSM, and I was there for about 4 or 5 years and then came over to Rogers & Company. So again, my career has been fully dedicated to auditing nonprofit organizations, and I look forward to working with you. And thank you, Scott. We're going to miss you here at Rogers & Company, and I appreciate the handoff.
Absolutely. So if it's okay with everyone, what I kind of thought we would do is I'll just sort of maybe lead the discussion, but Sandeep is welcome to jump in at any time, and you know, anybody has any questions as we get to that particular section, feel free to jump in and answer your ask your question. I would like it to be as much of a dialogue as possible. I don't want everybody to feel like they have to wait until the end. But what I thought I would do is, I know Eileen sent out the draft financials as well as the draft board letter. She also included a grouping schedule. So this is a trial balance that's grouped according to financial statement line item, as well as the journal entry report that we had. So those were really kind of put in there for those who want to tie out the numbers and just kind of see where some of the numbers are coming from. But if it's okay with the committee, I'll probably start with the draft financials, talk about the opinion, kind of go through some of the key numbers. I think since we've had such a kind of long journey together getting through this audit, and especially in relation to the discussions about something other than a clean audit opinion, it might be beneficial to, and I'll touch on, you know, as I'm talking about those main numbers or major numbers, kind of some of the audit procedures that were done, some of the, you know, roadblocks that we ran into, which I think will help understand maybe the ultimate opinion at that point. And then we'll go in and talk about the various statements and some of the footnotes that are probably of probably more significance than others. And then once we've gotten through that, we'll go through the draft board letter. So if everybody's okay with that, I can get started.
Great. I'm going to interrupt with a couple of things, Scott. Number one, you know, people on this committee have different levels or different types of experience with financial reports. So I wanted to say, if you don't understand a term or a concept or something, note it down so you can ask for an explanation, you know, at a good stopping point. The other thing is that I think with the management, the board letter, I think that's usually confidential, is it not? It's an internal document. So I'm not sure if we want to review it on the open stream.
True.
Is that the point? Yeah. So if we can get to it tonight, then we might go into closed session. I don't know if we will or not. So.
Okay. Good point. Thanks for keeping
let's
me
Let's just
clear
move forward. And then we could do, because I know we are, what's more urgent for us is the actual audited financial statements, because that's what we send out to the California Attorney General's charter. Since the management letter is more internal, it's not as urgent for us to get through that tonight.
Sure. No problem.
And you go ahead from there. Thank you.
All right.
Real quick question just about operating the meeting. If we want to ask questions, is there a way to get on a stack, like push a key on the keypad or a numbers?
Let's see. That was James. I could see if you push. I'm not really sure. What I would ask is to get on the stack, wait until there is a pause. You know, in other words, don't shout out over somebody who's talking, you know, somebody to the stack, but wait till there's a pause, ask to be on the stack, and I'll take note of it. And at a good stopping point, I will call on you.
So just say our name, ask to be on the stack.
Yeah, yeah, just say James, let's see, do we have more than one James now? I don't think so. So James to the stack would work, and then I'll note it and call on you at the right time.
Okay? How long are we, how much time are we
going to be for each part of this?
All together? I didn't define times to the separate sub points of this because I wasn't sure how long it was going to take. So, you know, we'll do our best to stay within a reasonable.
I can add a little bit of context to that. Normally, when we present draft audit reports and financials and also board letters, it usually takes about an hour. And of course, that varies depending on, you know, how much conversation and questions take place. Given that we're probably going to hold off on the board letter, I would say we probably maybe 45 minutes to hour max, if that helps with your schedule.
Are you saying that includes questions and discussion, Scott, or is that just the presentation?
I think that should probably include both because, like I said, as we talk about different things, I'll definitely pause for questions so that we're kind of answering them while we're in the moment.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
All right.
So we're ready to go. All right. This is the moment we've all been waiting for, like 11 months in the making. So I know some of you have been on the audit committee for a while. Some of you are new to the audit committee. So just the first thing to kind of point out is the audit opinion. And I know it was probably, what, 3 or 4 months ago, maybe even a little bit longer, that we were on an audit committee call and we did kind of talk about some of the, I think, where we were with the audit status and what we were waiting on and concerns about the 18 audit coming up, the 19 audit being prepared for that. And so I think that was when there was a tremendous conversation about you know, what the opinion would look like. We had the pension audit was still in process. And one of the things that we talked a lot about was looking at the 16 audit and the fact that there was a scope qualification and that in all likelihood, we would be in the same situation or possibly a disclaimer based on the status of the pension audit, as well as, you know, whatever ended up being the nature of the support that we were provided or, you know, if there were no support, then that would obviously dictate that as well. So in looking at the opinion, there's a couple of things I wanted to point out. We have basically disclaimed an opinion. So this is slightly more severe than a scope qualification. Just for those of you who may or may not be aware of it, you know, a clean audit opinion is considered an unqualified opinion. Then you can have a variety of qualifications. Scope qualification is essentially saying that, hey, we weren't able to get our arms around certain numbers, and because of that, we're unsure if that number's as accurate as we would like it to be as auditors. We didn't have evidence to be able to support it. It's somewhat inconclusive. A disclaimer, we're basically taking a little bit of a step further, and we're basically saying that there's enough issues with documentation, support, and so forth. It's a little bit more pervasive than just an isolated section or area that we're basically saying these are the numbers as we present them, but we can't give you that clean audit opinion and that, you know, more comfortable assurance that these numbers are, you know, materially correct. So with that, we have this similar situation with the pension audit being kind of, I think right now it's maybe getting very close to being wrapped up if it hasn't, but it wasn't conclusive by the time that we were drafting these and preparing this opinion. In addition to that, and I kind of revert back to all of the conversations that those of you have been on the audit committee for the last 11 or 12 months that we've had during these meetings, there's been a lot of starts and stops related to where we were with getting information together. I know George and NETA, they have worked very, very diligently for a number of months, not just going in and kind of cleaning up accounting that was done, but they really almost kind of took on a little bit more of a forensic approach in the sense that there were a lot of accounting transactions that, you know, they didn't know what they didn't know because things maybe hadn't been recorded at all. And, you know, obviously they ran into a number of situations where the documentation was very sparse. And so it was a little bit of, for them, and I don't want to put words in George or anyone's mouth, but a little bit of kind of piecing a puzzle together. And as you can imagine, in some of those situations, you can kind of get maybe three of the four pieces and conclude on the fourth. And I think that's what they did in some of those situations where they were lacking documentation. As an auditor coming through, we're kind of taking their information. We can certainly kind of draw some similar conclusions, but at the same time, an audit, different from a review or something of providing less assurance, is we're really looking to be able to corroborate the numbers. So we ask the question, we're told the answer, and then we're asking you to prove to us the answer you just told us. And so there were a number of instances where we just weren't able to get to that, show us the proof, show us the documentation. And I think, and I know we're not necessarily going to talk about the management letter or the board letter at this meeting, but I think very similar to what you experienced in the prior year, I think the internal control structure that was in place during 2017, I know some changes have been made with NETA's involvement and MAPC's involvement over the last 11 or 12 months, but keep in mind, we're talking about numbers that are almost 2 years old at this point. So that internal control environment that was in existence 2 years ago is feeds into very much directly into our conclusion on this disclaimer opinion. The other thing I wanted to point out opinion-wise, and this, I apologize, is an edit that we will need to make. I guess in our fervor of getting the draft out, it was somewhat overlooked, but we will have an emphasis of matter related to the going concern, and we'll basically be talking, drawing attention to the fact that there is substantial doubt about the ability of the foundation to continue as a going concern. What that means in audit speak is that we as auditors, every client that we have, every audit that we do, we're really looking to see, is this a viable entity? What is the probability that this entity will be in existence 12 months after the date of our report? And so I think we've talked about this in previous meetings, but just as a little bit of a recap, some of the things that we look at, if you have a strong financial position versus are you in a net deficit position, a lot of turnover at an executive level, that can be an indicator of problems. Lack of documentation, lack of timely accounting, some of the things that, you know, we've talked about and I know you guys have experienced even prior to Rogers and Company becoming the auditors for the foundation. But those are the things that we then start to evaluate, and then we talk to management, we get management's insight on that. That's part of the emphasis of matter, is really just kind of drawing attention to that footnote where we do talk about management's plans. And I think hopefully you guys have had a chance to look through the footnotes and see that. But this was information that we worked with Maxie Jackson on to be able to kind of see, you know, what is the plan in place over the next 6 months, 12 months to basically kind of improve the overall structure of the foundation and improve its financial strength. So, but given the state that you're in as of right now and as of, you know, 2017's numbers and what those reflect, we do want to put that going concern opinion in there as well, just so that readers of the financial statements can at least be aware. They can be directed to these footnotes, and they can draw their own conclusions based on the information that's presented. So that's probably, to be honest, talking about the opinion is probably one of the probably more controversial things in the information that was circulated. So if there are any questions about the opinion, if anybody wants to ask those now, myself and the team, we're happy to field those.
Yes, please, Paulina.
I want to be on the stack.
Sure. Okay, I'm sorry. So we have Paulina and then who?
Marilyn.
Somebody else? Marilyn, okay. I'm sending phone numbers to a couple of people who apparently didn't get their call-in numbers. Paulina, Marilyn, anybody else at the moment? Okay. Paulina, go ahead.
So thank you for that introduction. My first question is, so the disclaimer of opinion means that there is no opinion, right? So in a sense, it's better than an adverse opinion, but...
correct.
What
you're,
right,
you're
is exactly okay? Is
you're absolutely right.
Okay. Now, as far as that is still an opinion of that sort still means that the audit is complete, right? It's just a matter of how the results are interpreted by people who read the audit.
Correct. I mean, typically an audit is also known as a level of an assurance service. And basically when you come in as auditors to do that assurance, that the idea is that we're providing some sort of comfort level that the numbers presented are materially correct. And that would be what would be known as our unqualified or our clean opinion. So if that were the situation, we would basically be saying, hey, we've conducted our testing, and based on our testing, we feel confident in saying that this is an unqualified clean opinion and that the numbers presented you can rely on as being materially correct. Last year's auditor gave a scope qualification where they basically were drawing attention to certain numbers, saying, you know, the pension plan audit, for example, that liability kind of still being determined, and the fact that that some of the documentation, I think they alluded to some of the documentation was a little light. And because of that, they gave a scope qualification. This year, like I said, and it is to very much to your point, Paulina, it goes from kind of a unqualified to qualified to disclaimer, and an adverse would be the most severe, because then you're basically saying, you know, we're basically saying with the disclaimer is that we couldn't get 100% comfortable to say that things were materially correct. So you can kind of, you know, take the numbers, reader beware, and draw your own conclusions. Very much like you said, an adverse opinion, you really are going that much further and saying these numbers are more apt to be wrong than anything else. So it really is the most severe. But in terms of your question about the audit being completed, yes, issuing this, it is an audit report that's issued, even though it's a disclaimer of an opinion, and that would complete the audit at that point, or at the point that you guys approve the numbers and so forth, and we actually issue.
And just to follow up, this is followed also by a statement of a going concern, right, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's based on previous audits or previous information gathered by previous auditors, analyzing the structure of governance and other issues such as loans that the foundation may have incurred that might present a going concern as far as the possibility of the foundation continuing.
Excuse me, Paulina,
talk about more?
I think they'll be addressing that.
Will
you be addressing that later, Scott?
I'm happy to answer that question now, actually, Eileen. To your point, it's kind of a yes and no. I mean, one of the things I can tell you that we look at as auditors that really does draw our attention to whether or not we need to consider issuing a going concern opinion is when we see that a company has a trend of losing money year over year. That's usually not a good trend that you want to have, regardless of what industry you're in. We then also look to see with nonprofits, we look at their net asset position. You know, if you have large reserves in place that you can kind of absorb losses for a number of years ago in a row. I mean, you know, the economy changes, things change. Not everybody can you know, turn a profit every year, so to speak. So, but to the extent that you have reserves that can absorb that and keep you viable into the next 12 months, that's something that we look at. I was going to get into the numbers a little bit in a minute, but when you do look at your statement of financial position, you actually are in a deficit position with your reserves, where in total you have a $4.6 million deficit for 2017. So what that basically should tell the reader of the financial statements is that this company has had a number of losses in a number of years in a row, that it's kind of eroded their reserve position and actually flipped it to the negative of a deficit. So there, I think the stuff that you mentioned about governance and structure and loans and how leveraged you are in terms of debt and so forth, those are all very much factors into it, and they do kind of tend to begin during the year, if not in prior years. But we're looking at prior years as well as the current year when we're doing our evaluation of going concern.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay. Any other questions about the opinion?
Okay. Yeah. I'm on this the Marilyn. Now, yeah, let me. All right, you have the floor now, Marilyn.
Yes, I have one quick question and then another. I have two questions. One is just quickly, where are the footnotes?
In the draft that Eileen sent out, I'm going to make sure that they didn't get cut off or anything.
They don't look like footnotes that you're used to. Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're not footnotes like you would do in a research dissertation or anything, but when you look at that draft of the financial statements that Eileen sent out, you've got the audit report in the beginning. You've got that table of contents. There's 4 or 5 pages of financial statements with numbers. And then I believe it's on page 9, it actually starts kind of more of a verbiage and dialogue talking about the organization with some numbers interjected. That's what we refer to as footnotes. Sorry.
Okay, good. Okay. My comment, and thank you. My comment is this, that we're looking at the audit for 2017. Now, having been involved, as many of us were, in trying to raise funds for Pacifica and our station over the past years, we've been totally crippled because of the lack of audits. And we were not able to raise the kind of money that we could have if we had the audits done. And we know we messed up really bad. But now we're starting to get on a footing, and it was such a joy to hear that we possibly could actually be on track to get CPB money next year, because we are catching up. We did hire NAFTA. We do have a CFO. We are cleaning up our act. And just when we're on the verge of cleaning up our act to be declared not a viable organization, it's like a kick in the head, because if we go out, we can't go out now to raise money from any kind of donors anywhere with that kind of a record on top of us, because we are improving, and we know we have problems, but we're finally getting ourselves back on our
understood, Marilyn. Thank you. Scott, do you want to, or somebody else, do you want to reply?
No.
Or Maxine, perhaps?
From an audit perspective, when we evaluate going concern, we are not saying when we issue a going concern that this company is not going to be in existence in 12 months. We're not saying that this company doesn't have plans in place that could very well turn things around, improve the situation, and so forth. I mean, unfortunately, as auditors, we're kind of like financial historians. We're talking about what has happened. And, you know, one of the things that we have to do as auditors is be objective. We're not supposed to put a lot of editorial or I hate to use the word opinion, but we're not really, we really have to look at everything in a very concrete, either what happened or show us the proof that something can happen. So when you talk about a going concern, we're basically saying is, it's a little bit of a yellow light warning. Hey, this company has been dealing and struggling financially. Read the footnote that we're directing you to and that emphasis of matter that you will see in the opinion, because that's essentially what it is. We're going to say, hey, draw your attention to this footnote. Read management's plans to deal with substantial doubt or going concern. And then it's really up to the individual, whether it's a donor or a grantor or whomever, to be able to decide, hey, I think that their plans seem viable. That sounds like a good plan. The only other thing that I would say is, and I think this is part of what maybe we've discussed over the 11 months, and I definitely cannot say enough of how much personally I think you guys have improved and how much further along you are than when we were hired as your auditor. But I think one of the things that's more important, and your concern is a good concern, and it's a very valid concern, but I think that you're poised to be able to get the financial 18 audit done within the next 2-3 months, and then be in an even better position with the fiscal year 19 ending in September, and the fact that NETA has been involved with maybe not since the beginning of fiscal year 19, but they certainly by the end of the year will have taken over and had a tremendous involvement in that accounting for that year. I think that's where you're going to see things improve. And I think you're also going to see the results of some of the things that Maxie has outlined that was incorporated into that footnote as to how you're going to address some of the concerns. So I really think, given the fact that you're doing a 17, 18, and 19 audit, essentially within a six-month period of time, I think anybody looking at the results of those audits and seeing some of the structural improvements that are being made in terms of internal controls, I think it's going to paint maybe not quite as bleak of a picture as you're concerned about.
I hope not.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. I have a question. Just looking at the Maestro screen, I see that Eugene and James both have two little hands next to their names. Were you trying to ask questions, or is that just
no.
Something funny? No? Okay. James, you're okay there? Okay. Okay, thank you. All right, so we can proceed. Anybody else want to ask a question or make a comment at this time?
Paulina, very briefly. Yeah? Paulina, very briefly, if I may. Scott, thank you so much. Actually, that makes it a lot clearer. The fact that it's very important to remember that we're talking about the 2017 audit that does not, in fact, reflect the health of the foundation at this time. And I appreciate you explaining that there are many signs of improvement that we should just continue our work as far as those improvements are concerned. Am I right?
I think you guys are in a good place, or getting in a good place right now. I think, I think if you go back and you look at your 15, 16 audits and the time it took to get those done, and you look at some of the management letter comments and the board letter comments that came out of those audits, and I think Maxie has alluded to this in some of our previous calls, the turnover that you've experienced at the executive level, some of the accounting issues that have occurred, these things have been going on for more than just 1 year. They've been going on for a number of years. And, unfortunately, the longer those kinds of things kind of go in that unfortunate state, it takes a little while to get them back on track and get them caught up. And so I would say, I'm not a psychic. I can't predict the future. It wouldn't be appropriate as an auditor for me to try to do that. But I do feel like you guys have taken some strong and appropriate steps during the last 12 months, by hiring any TA and having them on board, having them, take over the accounting or a good chunk of the accounting, for having them in change some of the policies and procedures in accounting and really kind of strengthen that role. I think, at least from talking to everybody and what I've seen historically, I think that you're probably in a stronger accounting position than you've been in quite some time. I know that, we were hired last, I believe, July. I think Maxie came on October 1st. It's really important to have a good, strong executive director. And I know that we have weekly calls with NETA, and Maxie's on that call as well, and those have been going on for months, just as our own kind of internal status update, so that, we know where everybody is and we can kind of keep the ball moving and report to you guys on the audit committees. I think one of the things that's really impressed me with Maxie is that, he's very much helping us with the 17 audit and keeping things moving where we need him to. But I'm very impressed with the fact that he's very forward looking. He's looking at, 2019. He's looking at 2020. And to be honest, that's a good perspective to have, because, you need to be able to reach out and look at other funding sources and really to have the revenue come in and be able to kind of right the ship, so to speak. So I hope that things work out and things continue to improve. But the only thing I can say as an auditor is that I think you guys have made some good steps, and you've got some good tools and some good folks in place right now that, if they're able to continue going, and then hopefully, you'll turn the corner and be in the place that we all hope that you will eventually be.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to interrupt for a minute just to say hello to Donald Goldmacher, who has joined us. And I see there is somebody on with just a phone number. I'm not sure who that might be. It's 1-703-869-3870. Is there somebody else who we haven't said hello to?
No, that's me. That's my cell phone number, and this is Jorge Diaz from Rogers and Company.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's just, okay. Yeah, I probably don't have you
in the code. I don't know what happened, but, that's my number. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jorge. Mm-hmm. Okay. Scott, go. Please continue.
Sure. So turning the page, getting past the opinions, the first statement that you see is the statement of financial position. So for those of you who maybe work outside a nonprofit in your on your day job, this is the equivalent of a balance sheet, if that resonates a little more clearly for folks. So this is basically our assets, our liabilities, and our net assets, or it would essentially be equity if we were in a for-profit world. So just a couple of things that I wanted to point out on here is the cash and cash equivalent number. So we've gone up about 42% from the prior year. Cash is one of those numbers that as auditors and accountants, we definitely like to try to nail down those numbers. I think with a lot the discussion we just had about the disclaimer of opinion, I did want to at least kind of point out and talk a little bit about where the procedures we did and around cash to maybe give you guys a little bit of a some comfort level. So as you know, NETA worked very hard. I think for some locations, they even had to go in and kind of redo and revamp the way bank reconciliations were done for the entire 12 months of 2017. And that's something that they did before we, as the auditors, even got started with that. So one of the things that we did as part of our testing with this, we literally confirmed, and what confirmed means is we send a letter or notification to your bank identifying the bank account and asking them to independently come back to us and say what the bank balance was as of, and we confirmed it as of the first of the year, and we confirmed it as of the last day of the year. So essentially, we wanted to feel good that our starting numbers were verified by the bank, and that our ending numbers were verified by the bank. So we did that for all of the bank accounts. And unless I counted them wrong, I think that Pacifica has about 25 bank accounts. So there's a variety of bank accounts that are associated with each location and including the national office. So we confirmed all of those with the banks. We did not have any exceptions in those confirmations, anything that we had to go back and look at. We then subjected all of the bank reconciliations, and I should say bank reconciliations at the beginning of the year and bank reconciliations at the end of the year. We also intermittently kind of judgmentally selected some bank reconciliations during the year where we basically go in and we test those. So we would look at deposits in transit, for example, and outstanding checks. These are typical reconciling items. And then we would look to see that the deposits and the outstanding checks that they all cleared and that they were all supported by the appropriate documentation. So as it relates to the cash, we were able to get through all of that testing and not have any adjustments or any concerns at the end of that. So there were no exceptions that came out of our cash testing. So the one thing that I would say with that is that's very much kudos to NETA because they did a lot of work. There were a lot of adjustments. If you guys may or may not remember from previous calls, but we started with a trial balance. George's group worked through a lot of adjustments. In fact, so many adjustments that we actually ended up with a second trial balance that for our purposes, we just upload into our software, and that becomes our basis for our testing. But again, I think our final trial balance that we worked off of was the third trial balance after a number of journal entries were made by NETA. So they really did a good job cleaning up cash, and for that, we were able to conduct our testing on cash and feel comfortable at the end that the cash number was materially correct. So I think that I only bring that up just because cash is probably the most susceptible asset to theft and misappropriation. So it's that's the number that I personally would probably want to feel really, I mean, if you can't conclude on cash and get comfortable with cash, then everything is in up in the air. So there is hopefully a little bit of good news with respect to that. I'll kind of defer it for a minute, but I think a lot of people like to talk about, you know, this account went up because of this and this reason and that reason. I think when it comes to talking about cash, I think the statement of cash flow is the best way to illustrate that. So that statement's a couple of pages away. So when we get to that, I'll kind of circle back on that. The other thing on the asset side that I thought was probably worth mentioning is accounts receivable. So it looks like this jumped up quite a bit during the year. It was $4,500 last year, $269,000, almost $70,000 this year. Most of the things that we were seeing in accounts receivable in the past were related to like employee advances. One of the things that we did have was an audit adjustment that was basically a reclassification, because we had a $243,000 reclassification, and this related to listener support, that when it was recorded, typically that would be, somebody pledges support, you're going to record it as a credit to revenue, a debit to a receivable. For whatever reason, that was recorded as, I believe, a debit to accrued expenses. So it looked like someone maybe just either made an honest mistake or hit the wrong account or whatever. But so when we reclassed that, which basically means we took it out of accrued expenses and put it in the right geography on the financial statements, we put it in with accounts receivable just to kind of get it in the right place. And that's basically what made up the biggest swing in that number. So just wanted to kind of point that out. Otherwise, it does look a little bit odd. The prepaid expenses, for the most part, are pretty consistent year over year. Inventory, very much the same thing. I believe other assets also very similar year over year. I believe other assets, and Sandeep, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's security deposits related to your leases.
Correct.
So you would expect that to be, well, thank you. You would expect that to be consistent year over year, unless you're entering into a bunch of new leases. Let's see, restricted cash. This is kind of a good number to focus on. This is essentially, and Sandeep, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this gets involved with our endowment number as well. This is where we're keeping our endowment.
Yes, the endowment we have our restricted cash, and just like for the cash and cash equivalent procedures, we applied the same procedures for restricted cash as well, and they all came back.
Right. And the thing that I only bring up the endowment is the endowment really is kind of, those are those restrictions when people donate money where they're basically saying, you know, you can only spend it for this, or you really can't spend the principal of it. And so a lot of organizations will set it up in an investment account. Pacifica has it set up in a restricted cash account. And so it's a number that it is important to monitor that, so that you're not spending it in a different manner than what the donor intended. Property and equipment. We went through property and equipment. We got a lot of detail. We put together a roll forward where we start with kind of the ending balance from the prior year. We add in any additions that were made, any disposals that were performed during the year, and then it literally kind of carries that balance forward to what the ending balance is. So we were given quite a bit of detail for that. We were able to put together a roll forward where we could isolate things. We recomputed the depreciation expense. We didn't have any exceptions that came out of that recomputation of the depreciation expense. And the movement, quite frankly, between the 2 years and property and equipment is literally there were about $21,000 worth of purchases that were made. And the other difference of $200,000 was the depreciation and amortization expense on the existing fixed assets. I think those are probably the big highlights as far as the asset side of things go. When you go to look at accounts payable and your liabilities, those I do want to kind of back up just for a minute and give you some perspective of the testing that we did with accounts receivable and revenue. We tend to look at account groupings in terms of an account cycle. So if you think about it, when you generate revenue, there's the receivable that's typically involved when people pledge support and whatnot. So we tend to look at accounts receivable in conjunction with revenue. In testing those, we actually did a statistical sample to generate a sample size and applied that to the entire population. So revenue and receivables for all of the stations involved, and then pulled that sample. We sent that out. Folks sent us the support they had. I think in total we looked at about 40 samples. And this kind of gets a little bit into some of that documentation we were talking about. You know, we got quite a bit of documentation back. And unfortunately, in some cases, the only documentation we were really able to get to support the revenue number was that a deposit was made and that cash was made. And so that became a little bit problematic. I mean, the good news is we could see that money made it into the bank, but from an audit perspective, we're generally accepted accounting principles are on an accrual basis. And so it doesn't necessarily give us the warm and fuzzy that, you know, if a number maybe hadn't been collected yet, say somebody pledged, but the cash had never been received. How do we know where's that trail and where's that going? So that was a little bit of a problem that we ran into that, just to kind of give you guys a little bit of perspective from that standpoint. But getting into the liability side, I mean, accounts payable stayed fairly consistent with the prior year. I think that, you know, for nearly $3 million in accounts payable, it only moved about $25,000 year over year. Procedures that we use or employ with accounts payable is, you know, we look at the listing that you provide as our client, and hey, this is everything that we've accrued and we've recorded. We then look at, you know, subsequent payments to make sure that, you know, if we'll pull support, we'll look at support, we'll see that you know, is in recorded in the right period. So if a payment made after year end, did that relate to something that you received prior to year end? And then was it actually part of that account payable listing? So we kind of performed standard procedures with that. Accrued expenses and payroll benefits, there was a fairly big movement with this number. In the sense that it went up about $423,000. It's 17% year over year. Just to kind of give you an idea of some of the things that make up this category on the financial statements, it includes accrued expenses, accrued payroll, accrued vacation, accrued pension liability, and other accrued. And other accrued relate primarily to 403B, ING payables, and then union dues, et cetera. So with this, I think some of the bigger movement was related to, I guess, estimating that accrued pension liability year over year. I believe the payroll number and the vacation number, I think those actually came down a little bit compared to the prior year. And then the other big number you see in the liabilities is the accrued rent. This is essentially the deferred rent associated with the various leases. It's a little bit of a mechanism that we use in accounting, where we're basically tracking everything on an accrual basis versus a cash basis, and just trying to make sure that things get recorded in the appropriate period on a straight line basis. So it's a little bit of a convention. It stayed pretty consistent year over year, but that is what accrued rent is. Anything you'd like to add to that, Sandeep, on any of those liability accounts?
No, I think that's about it, unless anyone else has any questions on the liability side.
Yes, Paulina, please.
Sure.
Go ahead, Paulina.
As far as I understand, the stated basis for your disclaimer of opinion is the lack of information about the pension liability, or the lack of the fact that you haven't been able to prove the paper trail for pension liability. Can you talk more about that, please? The basis of your opinion for, or lack of opinion, right, the disclaimer of opinion as far as the pension liabilities for Pacific are concerned.
Sure. So the fact that that you guys have been involved with the Department of Labor and that some contributions weren't made, and I know you have other auditors involved kind of working through that situation with the Department of Labor. Part of that is the outcome of that would be is what the liability associated with that is. And so given the fact that that is still an ongoing or has been an ongoing process with the Department of Labor and your pension auditors, there really isn't a number for us to be able to audit, so to speak, if that makes sense.
And not really, because how come we have a different set of auditors just for the pension funds? Is that common for nonprofits?
I believe it is. There are firms that specialize in that sort of thing. It's not uncommon.
Correct.
Scott or Sandy?
Scott. I'm sorry, same question?